one thing. Blum was a Republican.
Really?
And my Uncle Lowry was a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And they just might not do it. Actually, that just one election they had, and Uncle Lowry, he'd get drunk near the election. He'd come out, Blum got down there inside of here, you know. And Blum, well, Uncle Lowry, Blum was out of the shop there working, and the Democrats won. Uncle Lowry got right up even where Blum was. I think there's two or three times. And he said, well, four more years of prosperity. I'm just beat it down.
Were you related to any of the Gudgers or your wife or the Rices?
No.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you remember anything else about Cousin Owen Gudger? One reason I'm so interested in him, when I was up at my brother's house, Charles Newcomb on Sam's Branch, I found a box with a manuscript, 170-some pages. And I took it to my brother and I said, where'd you get this? What is it? He said, honey, I don't know, but if you want it, you can have it. Well, Jack Cole and Charles and I figured out that it must have been written by Owen Gudger, and it's the history of Western North Carolina. It's a wonderful document, and it needs to be printed, and I'd love to see it in print. And that's what one reason that makes me so interested in him.
I like him. He's a nice fella.
He's a fine man.
Yeah.
What else did he do over in Asheville?
I was county carpenter to begin with, the first job that I had there, looking after the carpenter work that the county had there.
Oh. So you worked with all those people?
Off and on, I worked over 20 years.
And they're pigeons. Did you have to take care of the courthouse?
Yeah.
So you'd know that building from top to bottom.
I know from top to bottom.
It's mighty crowded now.
I've even patched the roof.
The roof?
I even put up the tower on top of it. Radio antenna.
That'd be scary.
Mm. Bill Stiles, a lawyer, climbed it.
Now, when Father first came here in 1932, there was a man named Scroop Stiles.
Scroop Stiles.
Was his lawyer and bought the place for him and so on.
Yeah, and William Stiles was his son. He was county attorney there for quite a while.
And was Scroop Stiles a very proper man? Did he have a little tie or something? That,
yeah.
I have a sort of...
Pretty kind of fella.
Yeah. Was he a good lawyer?
Well... He just tried these here low cases, nothing any high cases, small cases.
I wonder how in the world he got such a first name as Scroop.
I don't know.
Hello there. I'm Alan Newcomb, and I've been doing radio and television shows around these parts for a few years. Maybe we know each other already. But I was recently reminded of an earlier part of my life when I used to be a Kriegsgefangener. That's what I said, a Kriegsgefangener, a German prisoner of war. And I was reminded of those 8 months I spent in a German prison camp during World War II when I saw a preview showing of the motion picture Stalag 17. I like movies, but this is much more than just a movie, this Stalag 17. And for the time that I followed the experiences of the group of American servicemen in Stalag 17, I was back there again in Germany, living that prison life once again. You mind if I reminisce a minute or two while the mood is fresh? You know, those were very different days, and very different ways from those the average American knows. We were hungry and cold and sick and lonely, and it got to the point where your whole world was bounded by those barbed wire walls that surrounded our camp. Within those high barbed wire walls, with nothing to eat and nothing to do, emotions got pretty well fired up. And sometimes the top blew off, as you'll see in Stalag 17. And yet it was surprising and encouraging, too, to see how those average American guys took that prison existence. The watery rutabaga soup once a day. The below-zero temperatures that found you with one blanket to your name. The German guns and spotlights trained your way 24 hours a day with itchy-fingered SS men behind them. The showers we took once a month. The thick mud at roll call into which you sank deeper and deeper as you stood there in formation. The long empty hours at night from sunrise to sunset when you tried to sleep with 20 other men snoring in the triple-decked beds around you. All of these discomforts and fears left the guys with the ability to laugh and play jokes on one another and even on their German guards, as you'll see in Stalag 17. There was a war going on, of course. That's why we were there. And although the guards all seemed to have learned one sentence in English and kept telling us, for you, der war ist over, ja? The war was still going on for us, too. There were escape attempts, long hours spent digging secret tunnels, and long conferences spent in planning how to annoy the German command. And you'll see thrilling escapes in Stalag 17. Well, there were no heroines in that German prison camp, or any of them, but there were plenty of heroes and plenty of villains. There were guys whom we came to hate because they hogged the lion's share of the scanty supplies we received. Others who traded cigarettes to the German guards for a fresh egg or a cigar or some other jealously guarded luxury. There were guys who tried suicide but failed because there was no place you could be alone long enough to succeed. There were guys who just wouldn't bathe anymore, guys who just wouldn't shave. There were all kinds, believe me. And you'll meet them all when you see Stalag 17. I'm serious now. This picture is an actual, true-to-life story of prison life, with all its drama and its sad humor and its heartache. It tells the story that I told in my book, Vacation with Pay. Maybe you've read that. It's the diary that I kept in camp, and it was published by Destiny Publishers. Look for it. I'd like to have you read it. Vacation with Pay, by Alan Newcomb. And go to see Stalag 17. There's a lot of interest now in our prisoners returning from Korea. They've been through a rough time, and they deserve your understanding sympathy. I think this picture may help you understand what they've been through. Whether it's a German camp or Japanese or Korean, the problems are the same. The fear and the discomfort and the strain of prison life are hard to feel unless you're one of those unlucky enough to have been there. From a seat in a theater, you can live in a camp like that for a couple of hours. When you see Stalag 17, it will be worth your while. And maybe you'll be able to understand the fervent sentiment of the fellow in my prison camp who wrote a poem about the captain of the boat who was coming someday to take us home. He was a British flyer, and here's what he wrote. Though I've never been no scholar, with no lovely white stiff collar, I've made me mind up, here I go, a poem. Now some will like it, others ate it, but I'm gonna dedicate it to the captain of the boat what takes us home. Now I've dreamt about this bloke, like you're often dreams of folk, perfect strangers, and yet you feels you knows him. And the moment that I eyes him, I bet I'll recognize him as the captain of the boat what takes us home. He may be gay and full of cheer. He may say, Sonny, now you're here, let's cruise around. Where would you like to roam? If he does, I'll tell him straight. You're the captain. You're me mate. Don't mess about. This ship's to take me home. I'll obey his slightest wishes, scrub his decks and wash his dishes, just as long as he steers straight across the foam. And at last, when we sight shore, I'll shake the bloomin' paw of the captain of the boat what takes us home.
This is a potpourri tape of from old audio tapes. Taylor from this area, and I'm going to let Coke tell you a little bit about this quilt. It has an awful lot of history to it. Coke, stand right here so we can get it on tape.
As you can see, this quilt has, you can't see from where you sit, a lot of patches on it. But on that are names in indelible ink. There's some 30. This was made by my grandmother Kenner. She was a Gudger, Sam Gudger's daughter. And the oldest dates on that are about 1860. So the quilt is 124, 25 years old, made before the Civil War. But she had on there, she had her husband sign it, and he has a patch on there, and all of her husband's brothers and sisters. Also, she had her people, her father and mother, Sam Gudger. Sam, this is Sam Gudger House out here. An old landmark, the oldest house in this country, yes. My daddy was 50 years old when I was born, and tomorrow will be 127 years ago. He's born in that house out there. And she has listed there her sisters and all her brothers with the remark on most of them. For instance, I'll just pick out one. It says, T.J. Harkins, December 1861, I trust that we'll meet in heaven. He married Margaret Kenworth. I'll take another one here. Samuel B. Gudger, my great-grandfather, forget not thy father. So it's really interesting all there. About 30 of these on there in indelible ink that was put on there at that time. And it's right interesting. Here a list of all the Candlers, the old Candlers, and the very distinguished men on there. For instance, George Candler, his father. George's wife was a granddaughter of William Moore, who was the first settler west of the French Broad River. Samuel B. Gudger here, my great-grandfather, was chairman of the Board of Commissioners at one time. It's right interesting. When I was in office, Charlie Justice ran. You remember Charlie Choo Choo Justice? He ran against me in office. And Charlie didn't know it, but Charlie's great-grandmother was a Kemmer. And my great-grandfather was chairman of the Bunker Board of Commissioners. I said, Charlie, what do you think about it? My great-grandfather was chairman of the Board of Commissioners. Same time your great-grandfather was elected treasurer of Buncombe County. You reckon we could get something going with us like that? And Charlie still tells that story. I believe that's it. It's really interesting, the historical thing there. Some 30, and in indelible ink, and just as plain as you can see down there, most of it.
Legislature two or three times, and I believe ran for Congress once. But anyway, he stood pretty well with the Republican Party, and he got Uncle a job in Washington City in the Treasury Department. Uncle went up there and stayed about 5 or 6 months, got homesick. He just quit that job and come home.
My grandfather gave him the
store down there to him and Aunt Bonnie. And he and Aunt Bonnie ran the store, and then they got the post office, and he had a little section cut off back there where for the mail in those days. And I remember, that wasn't big, but just a bag of mail. And it was delivered by the train. My uncle would go in there about when the 4 o'clock train come out. Well, we'd get mail at 9 o'clock in the morning, and then we'd get mail at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the neighbors would come in when he brought the mail over, and he'd call out their name just like you'd call a present on a Christmas tree. And if they were present, he'd just hand them the mail. If there wasn't, he'd stick them up in a little cubby hole. And in those days, they had 2 substations. They had one that at Curtis's Creek, and they had one at Dunsmore up on South Hominy.
I know where Dunsmore is.
And an old fellow Smith would drive down here twice a week and pick the mail up. And he'd carry it up, and he'd deliver the mail at Curtis's Creek, and then at Dunsmore, where they had a little substation, and the people had come down off the street and get their mail. But in the early days, about the days of the Civil War, the post office was Laurel Forks, North Carolina. My granddaddy had, there were no bridges here then, at Candlertown. There's a ford down just below the forks of the creek. The old Haywood County Road was just
And it was a ford there in the cross creek in Lake Ford. My granddaddy had a law office up in the fork of the creek, and there's laurel all around it, and he had a foot log. He lived up there where...
72, I believe, it says, Laurel Fork, written with a quill pen, and the stamp is canceled with a pen.
Well, now, Mabry's got a letter that Cash Gudger wrote his mother in the Civil War, and it was Laurel Fork.
Private North Carolina Infantry, 1861 to
1881. Then he wanted to name me Eastland McElroy.
Oh, mercy.
Mama wouldn't let him.
Oh, good.
It was after
Eastland the Bard Clay.
Eastland the Bard Clay.
He was born in 1828.
He's back where I came. They were both his great grandmother.
Born in 1828, died in 1829. Died in 1929. 100 years and 7 months. He's listed in the North Carolina Troop History and served as a private all 4 years.
Well, he's the one. Well, have you ever seen the boy?
I believe so.
Well, I can't believe that.
Well, your life is earnest and the grave is not as gold.
Now, when Dick and...
That's Cassius.
While we received Evelyn's things, there were a lot of things we didn't want.
But Evelyn listed for me. I wonder why they skip some of these pages.
I work down the basement and make a few repairs around the house and so forth. I don't like to waste nice weather working inside, but you know what, the Walker dog washy. Got a break there.
Sorry I was late. I mean, I just, these meetings, I never know how long they're going to last.
This community.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say it was about half divided. The 25th Regiment that left here,
mm-hmm.
The one off South Homney was George Howell's company.
My name is Thomas, born 147 years. And he really knows the history. And he visited cemetery after cemetery, and that's all he talked about when he came up here was the history of this. It was constantly on his mind.
Now, who is this person you're saying he...
Uncle Robert Hutchison. He appeared in this area.
Robert Hutchison?
Uh-huh.
He passed away, didn't he?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
He started out on his own family.
On his own
but
family.
But he spread till it covers practically everything in Hominy Valley.
That's right, and
every
his
family.
Daughter has a home over near Boone that she comes up in the summertime, and she has all of this information available. And she's about as interested in it, I think, as Uncle Robert is mm-hmm. right now.
What's her name?
Eula Dixon Nicholson. I have her address at home over here.
Okay, now would that be separate from Cousin Owen Gudger? Or
yeah,
is that
yeah.
Is that connected?
This was the whole school. This was close to first grade through the high school.
This is Valentine's Day, 1991, and we're at Candler, Charles and Eleanor Rice's house, and I will now introduce
Sarah Long.
What's your middle name?
Sarah Robertson Long.
Mitzi Tessier.
You have a middle name too.
Shaver.
Okay. Now this see has a lot of people that are really connected now, and you know their descendants are all of them still alive and there.
But I think this one is more important for two reasons. The school shows and Mr. Robertson's.
Yeah. And then I have I have another copy that shows the school better, but on 10 minutes notice, I didn't get that.
Well, Tanner Davis up at Davis's place. You know, I was driving for Fred Carter, and Mr. Davis found out I cut wheat. So he wanted me to get off and cut the wheat for him one day for the crate. And I left home at 3 o'clock one morning, and over there on Young Cove, and drove up there and cut wheat all day.
Up at Piscopee Ranch.
Up at Piscopee
Ranch. Piscopee House it was. I remember Turner Davis.
Yeah.
When I knew him, he was...
an old man, what are you?
Well, now, what was the history of Piscopee Ranch before Turner and Ella Davis?
Well, before, they kept all the sawmill men. Fred Carter would run a sawmill. And I was driving for Fred Carter, driving a brown, mare and a black one, driving for Fred Carter. And so he got me to cut wheat for him for a week. He made arrangements for Fred Carter for me to cut wheat for a week, and I cut wheat for a week.
And you remember there's a house that Mommy talks about up there, the Pinckney Davis house,
yes,
which now stands in...
Charlie, my husband lived with him a while.
Yes. Yeah, Johnny Ross lived there one time.
He taught school up there.
Where was the school?
Well, somewhere near there, I don't know.
I remember Cousin Charlie telling about cat jumping on the table by painting that there was one day and he something and she was forking that cat. He got rid of that cat.
I understand he used to have quite a vocabulary too.
Yes, sir.
When was that? Do you remember when that road was built up there and paved?
No, I don't remember. It was paved when I was with the state, but it was a county road. Yeah.
But when you were driving up there to go to with the cradle and the horses and doing
it wasn't paved.
Well, was the what is now Piscopee Ranch a boarding house in those?
No,
days?
No. Wasn't a boarding house, but you know the girls did the cooking, and they cooked just like they did now. We loaded the table down, and we had everything in the world we could eat. And he had about 500 hogs on that 500 acres there was on that mountainside. He had 500 acres that he had pig rooter hogs, and he killed them, and we had meat at every meal in the world. And we'd be out there at 7 o'clock every morning and do whatever we had to do.
Now there used to be, I remember Uncle Henry Warren and Aunt Cindy Warren. Do you remember them?
Yes, I do. I remember them.
Now how were they related to the Davises?
I don't know how they were related.
I remember one time coming across the mountain, across the gap from Sam's Branch over to the ranch. I was by myself, and Uncle Henry was sitting down there making wood shingles in the woods there at the base of the mountain.
Mary's sister sent Mary a little book about Charles Denise.
That's
fine. Find that mayor, M-A-R-E, the chief magistrate of the city. He's the mayor. He's the mayor. That's right.
Have you seen this one?
But those are good. Those are really good.
I mean, that's just a secret. Nancy first brought that on the scene from Chapel Hill.
Is that right? Well, those things are good.
Well, Byron, take them all up and let him play.
No, we'll never get them back.
That's
we're not
exactly
going to do that.
Right. That's what I was going
to
tell you.
No, we'll intend to, but we'll fail to do it. Not going to do it.
No, I'm going to get over to you.
Well, we'll have to get over there.
Lloyd's brother was over there one day, and they got to argue politics. They got pretty hot, you know. And finally, they got so mad at each other that Lloyd walked off down the hog lot and left his brother in the house. So finally, his brother came and mowed him down there. Lloyd's still mad. He looked over at Pig and he said, "Pig, what would you do if you had to vote Republican?" Pig just flopped down, rolled over his back, and shook all 4 feet. So his brother went back to the house, the news picked up the rest of the day.
Finally, the horse stumbled the third time. He just got his gun out and just shot it right between the eyes. And his wife just beat him out. He was. He listened, didn't say a word. He said, "That's once."
Oh, Lord.
Tell the story about a new horse.
Oh, that's Daddy's story. He said that Dad used to say that it's important to know the context in which something is said to understand the correct meaning of it. This man was driving his wagon, his horse, along the road. The fellow came along with a big automobile, hit the wagon, tore it up, knocked the horse over, knocked this fellow off of the horse, off of his wagon. Sometime later, this man sued for the injuries he said he had occurred in that particular occurrence. He was on the witness stand at the trial, and the attorney for the defendant, driver of the automobile, cross-examined. He said, "Now, you've seen this man here before today, have you not?" He said, "You saw him the day of this occurrence. Isn't that true?" He said, "Yeah." "And you talked with him. Didn't you talk with him? And you told him that you weren't hurt. Isn't that what you told him?" He said, "Now go ahead. You told him you were all right, that you weren't hurt." His lawyer said, "Go ahead and answer him. You can explain." He said, "Well, yeah." I said, I told him that." I said, "What happened was," said, "he came along," said, "that big car," said, "he hit my wagon," said, "knocked it over in ditch," said, "tore it all to pieces," said, "knocked my horse over there," said, "he was bleeding, his legs up in the air," said, "he came over there," said, "looks like I've done a little damage." I said, "Man, you've torn my wagon all to pieces. You've nearly killed my horse. He's in pain. He's hurt." He pulled out his pistol and shot my horse. He turned to me and said, "Are you hurt?" He said, "No, sir. I'm all right."
Speaking of graves, somebody was asking me the other day about the old Kiesel house. And as I recall, when I was a kid, I was taken down on the hill on this direction, mm-hmm. and that there were some old slave graves there,
yeah.
marked mm-hmm. with, are they still there?
Well, you know, they made the cow pass out of it. And they were right down, up the road, you know, to the camper park this way. Going up by Wiley's and up that way and around the hill. And they were on the slope of the hill, but just off of the road a little ways. Uh-huh. And I was so scared when I'd go by there, I would tiptoe. I was little, you know, and I was by myself. And I was going to my uncle's house where Mary I. Rice used to live. And I could hardly breathe.
How about that? And what's going to happen?
Well, about Douglas Ellington, who made the First Baptist Church, the Asheville City Hall, the S&W Cafeteria, the Merriman Avenue Fire Station, the main building at Lee Edwards High School, and Biltmore Hospital, and dozens of private residences.
Now, he was very well known in the early 20s. That's when the boom was.
Did you know him?
No, but I worked in town. They were taking down in 23, 22 and 23, moving that mountain there where the Better Park Hotel was. And I worked at the auditorium.
And you can remember when they moved that mountain?
Oh, yes, I had a chance to get a job with E.W. Grove for $2 more a week, and it wasn't worth making the change because it was going to be a temporary job. And so I was working with four lawyers, and they had offices at the auditorium. And they came over in my office and said a lot, the people, the girls that were working for them, and one of them told me that they could use me. And I was making 12 a week, and they offered me 14, but I didn't make the change.
Were you married then?
This is the year I got married. I got married in the year.
And where did you live then?
At my old home place. I never lived anywhere but there.
At Lucerne then?
The only place I ever lived there was, other than that, was when the weather was too bad to get home and the roads were not paved. And you came on a streetcar and got off, and if it was night when I got off, some of them would come and meet me, and my brothers. But on Starnes Avenue, Miss Duncan would rent your room for like 50 cents.
Is that the same doll lady later?
Yeah.
Really?
She worked at Edgar.
What was her first name?
Mabel.
Mabel Duncan.
And I know she had a baby while I was there, because she wanted me to come in and see her new baby, little Mabel. But there were several girls that would go there when the weather was. It was very rare. You just called her and asked if you could sleep at her house at night, and you know.
Really?
Well, she told you to.
Well, that was a great idea.
I didn't know her as well as I knew her husband. He had managed one of the big theaters, and he was known all around town. And he's the one that told me that she rented rooms. And just a little small room with a clean little bed in it. And there were several girls who would go there, and that would give her just a little bit of money.
And where'd you say you were working at that time?
At the auditorium.
What were you doing there?
They had offices there. There were some offices there for businessmen.
But what auditorium would that have been then?
The regular auditorium of the Catholic Church, right where the Civic Center is now.
At the same place the Civic Center?
Yeah, where they tore the building.
And what year would that have been?
23.
I wasn't even born then.
No, you were. You were born in what year?
1924.
And yeah, you were born then. But you were born in 24, because I worked on there in 24. I worked on that because I was married for a while.
What year were you born?
7.
I'm coming down the King's Mountain, and thus, of course, we have the battle which is won, because the Cherokees couldn't go down there. But this is the land grant that William Moore received from Caswell, who was the governor, who signed this, and of course, this is the survey. That was only for 450. He actually later on had more land than this. But not knowing how much it is, I took this map and put the stamps on about what I thought, which included the Inca Lake and the Inca plant, and that property which he inherited, which is the old Moore Mountain and Inca Lake here. But he came back and he lived there with his second wife and his family, and he grew up, and of course, as I say, he built a home, and this is the home that he built. It's been weatherboarded, but Dolly Calogaracus' parents bought this house from Dr. David Gudger's family, and Dolly lived in this house, and so she took a picture, and she gave me the picture of this old Moore house.
Cumberland Avenue, and his mother was sweet as say. And the Chapmans owned that Ross Cragen.
Oh, out at Skyline.
Uh-huh, and that's what we sold. That was our main project. And then as the moon got so heated, they sold all over the town, all over Cox Avenue. They sold some lots on Cox Avenue, big amounts of money, you know, big boom.
What made the boom start?
I don't know.
You mean real estate boom? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, it started everywhere, but that. What he's talking about was right there in Asheville. When Mr. Ellington's talking about. And so they were so prominent, and Bryant's, one of the Jim Bryant, they were so prominent, and then Frank Cox, he owned a lot of buildings all over town. They were so prominent, they see the Lord Cecil was their personal friend, just like a young boy. They had all graduated from Wake Forest. And they were all boys of people that had money, and they didn't have...
That built St. Lawrence Catholic Church?
No, I didn't know him, but that is a real engineering feat. That, you've been in it, haven't you?
Uh-huh.
That dome.
The dome?
It's all put together up there like that, different from any other. There's one other small Catholic church in one of the western states. It's the only other one in the United States. It's a real something, the Catholic Church is.
I went gotten out of the Asheville Citizen from time to time.
Yeah, well,
the chronology.
Well, you're, see, when you write your book, it's going to be titled Elner Rice's Journal of Asheville, it has to be Buncombe County, South Buncombe County or West Buncombe County, because a lot of them be Candler, of course. 1900s, you see these 1800s, other people wrote.
Well, here's a picture of the old streetcar.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember is that the streetcar like you were talking about when you lived out on Amboy Road?
Oh, yes, honey, yes. And they had a few that they used sometime on the holidays when they had big affairs at Riverside Park. You know where, you've heard of Riverside Park, you got washed away in flood.
Where was that?
It was down... Do you know where the, I'm sure you do because you've been to vintage barrels there. Riverside Cemetery, you know where that is?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right down in there.
Below the Riverside Cemetery.
And the streetcar ran all the way to Weaverville.
Well, we still don't know what powered those streetcars. Let's see.
Oh, yeah. Well, I thought they bound and had electric cables.
Electric cables back in those days?
Why, sure. They said we had electricity, but... Gosh, since I was a little tiny girl, didn't they for you?
We didn't get it to the
Oh, we didn't either. We didn't eat till Copper Wade West Baseball. We didn't either, honey. But we had lamps, too. In fact, I was a great big teenage girl when we got electricity.
Well, it didn't come to Sam's Branch till the year I graduated from college.
Yeah, that's
1946.
Right. But I bet you Vanderbilt had it.
Oh,
and I've never heard that question asked. But there's nobody to ask either, unless it's recorded somewhere. I know no one any older than me. That, of course, they wouldn't remember. And they must have had some kind of a cable something that made steam. They never called it a steam streetcar, they called it a streetcar.
But did it have these, let's look at this picture.
All was in Amboy Field and down
there. Yeah, look here, it's got a cord, a cable kind of thing going up.
But those were cable that came to West Side.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
They were cables.
Well, then it had to be electricity. Well, here's a big real estate sign over Finkelstein's in the province.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Now, you see, the thing of it is, he was such a multi-millionaire.
Who?
Vanderbilt. That he might have had his own generating parties.
I expect he would have.
And that did the streetcar, but you, that's what it is, if it ever was recorded.
But I can't believe it went all the way to Amboy Road to West Asheville.
It sure did, but across from Biltmore Railroad Station, where they met the people and took them to Suffolk Springs Hotel. And it went right up through that middle of that field, not between Amboy Road and the river. I sprayed all up through that and made a turn somehow and turned along about where Virginia Avenue comes out down there, you know. It went
into Haywood Road, you mean?
Now, I'm not sure, but it was on the farther where it made the turn to go to Suffolk Springs. That used to be called Suffolk Springs, the place in Mammon Hills.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure where it made that turn to get over in there. But it wasn't too far from that doctor that we knew.
Dr. Hinton.
Yeah.
Back on the backside of Virginia.
The tracks were down below his.
Oh.
And we cut through there somewhere and cut through, I imagine, people still run across those old tracks. I've heard talk of it since I was a little girl, of them plowing, and there'd be the streetcar rails.
Oh, plowing up the streetcar rails.
Oh, yeah. My brother looked for pieces of them all the time to sell.
Really?
Oh, he was around. Oh. He was always wanting to sell junk.
Oh.
He was like you, he collected junk. But I think it's interesting. But now this recon, they went to the square, and you had to run. Now when I worked at the dime store, they worked little young girls, like 11 and 12 years old.
That
and,
young?
Oh yes. Oh, at the dime store, no place you could get a job.
Was that Crescent?
Woolworths. Where I worked, and they made $1 a day.
What?
And it was good money. So they on Saturday night they stayed until 11 o'clock. And everybody, you saw everybody, ever knew what you done on Saturday. And if they worked on Saturday, they went Saturday evening.
You mean they worked 11 and 12 year old girls till 11 and 12, 12
they
at night?
They didn't work here in 8 hours or anything like that. And they had two and three girls in each little counter. Most everything was a dime and a quarter and a nickel. And you could get the nicest.
No wonder they put in child labor laws.
And so you had to run. You had the last car left at 11:30. And you wanted to catch that 11 one, the one that left right there about 11. And the Woolworth was, do you know where the Wachovia Bank is, the new Wachovia Bank, the corner of Haywood Street and Patton Avenue? Do you remember where the old Eastwood store was? Can you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was
the
right
downtown
there.
One.
Dime store was right there.
Oh, the dime store was
there? They're not in business anymore. Eastwood's are not, are they?
Eastwood's is gone.
Yeah.
I liked Eastwood.
Yeah. I had a friend whose sister was married to Jeff Eastwood, one of the boys.
Oh. Did they start here?
No, but they had a store here. They had them all over North Carolina. They lived in New York. They lived in New York City. And he wouldn't let her go to town. He wouldn't let her go to town unless his secretary went out there and went with her. Miss Deeper would.
Really? Why?
I'm just scared something happened to her in New York City.
That would happen to
her. They lived in an apartment.
Probably
in
a apartment.
Uh-oh, there goes your telephone.
That's
the
dog and check it. Wrong with that.
Now this here is a magazine article from Scribner's Monthly from March 1874 about the Great South, the mountains of North Carolina. I thought you'd like to look at that. It's full of woodcuts. This is the view on the Swannanoa River, a horse going over
there. I always love history. It's one of my best subjects. Uh-huh. Well, it's yours.
Yes, I like history. Now that one goes right in
and
here.
Geography.
And then these other things are just things. This is a house tour and a walking tour and map, and this is a chronology, 4th century chronology.
Strawberry Hill, after start having that road bend festival, they organize some kind of a special club and they build a little clubhouse on it.
Oh.
And I think that old Johnson home in those places. And you see, I don't even know whether Johnson's owned that or not. They could have been some other owner.
Now, here's the answer to our question we were just talking about. It says, Underground at Biltmore Mansion by Bob Brown. One of the huge switchboards in the Biltmore House basement is shown here. Much of it is still in use. Note the maze of bars leading from behind the marble panels.
To his hunting lodge, and it was somewhere around Pisgah.
Buck Springs. Did you ever go up there?
Oh, no, never to his hunting lodge.
Tony Candler was talking yesterday. He went there.
I guess so.
He went there several times. Now, here's where they were building the old Grove Park Inn, the first Grove Park Inn.
Yeah.
Here's where they were excavating for the bomber ship. Oh, you can keep it. First one about the Cherokees. Did you ever have anything to do with the Cherokees when you were a young girl?
No, they never would allow us to have anything much to do with them. They were pretty, one family moved in, and what were their names? Not too far from us, and they didn't want us to play with the children. And they didn't, the Moors were funny. They didn't want any kin to ever marry, and they didn't ever want anybody to marry any foreigner.
Well, the Moore family, of course, fought the Cherokees way back.
And But, anyway, that name didn't come to me at all. And I talked. I was in about to tell people I did. I really didn't. But they had one daughter, and I used to sit up and see her and read to her and show her words. And she would tell people I taught her to read.
Well, did you really?
No, I don't think so.
Maybe she did catch on.
And so I would read to this Cora. And, you could tell them Indians. Gosh, Heather. And,
Mrs. Beloyd Robinson, Tilly Robinson, was our neighbor on the Mile Street for many years.
The boarding house she called it in, wasn't it?
Pisgaview House, they called it.
Yeah, it was. And she said,
I remember when they changed
the
summer
to us.
Yeah.
Oh, she was hardworking.
Well, do you remember her mother before her, Mrs. Turner Davis?
All I remember is her mama.
Well, did she start, who started the Pisgaview House?
Didn't the mother inherit some of that some way?
Oh, yeah, it's been in the Davis family ever since.